Welcome to the Ecology and Research Channel. Green issues, ecology, incredibly important to embodiment. Obviously, we're embodied in place, we're embodied in a world. How we treat ourselves is how we treat the planet and vice versa. So this is super important, I think, for our whole planet. Research relates to this. We've sort of put two together there. We didn't quite know where to put research, so we put them in with ecology. This stage has lots of great speakers, people I personally enjoy, and it's sponsored by Forests Without Frontiers. So rather than sell a sponsorship for this channel, we decided, you know what, let's give it away to a green charity. Tree planting seemed a good one. We thought we can all get behind that. We all breathe air. We looked into a load, actually. Some of them are quite famous, but don't actually plant a lot of trees, weirdly, or other things aren't so good with them. This one, Forests Without Frontiers, really does the work. They're in charge of a really big reforestation project in Central Europe, but, you know, we're all breathing it, thank you. It's run by Nicoletta, a very cool lady, and just a cool organization that really does the work. The money goes, you know, efficiently to actually planting trees. I'm happy to be supporting them. For me, it was like, you know, when we were looking at our charities to support, a green one just made a lot of sense to me. That just was obvious. Please do support them. Links below. As well as that, enjoy the whole channel. There's so much richness in this topic.
Wonderful. Yes, so well said, Mark. Thanks for that. And welcome everyone to this another exciting episode on the Embodiment Conference. And this one is brought to you all the way from New Zealand, just across the seas from me. The workshop title is Local Acts, Global Perspectives, From Embodiment to Activism. So welcome and thank you, Dr. Karen Barber, to this time. Just to let you all know a little bit about Karen, she is an associate professor in the School of Arts at the University of Waikato in New Zealand. She's author of Dancing Across the Page, Narrative and Embodied Ways of Knowing. She's co-author of Repositioning Sight Dance, Local Acts, Global Perspectives. And she's also the editor of Dance Research Aotearoa Journal. Her work is widely published. Karen focuses on articulating embodied ways of knowing ourselves, our relationships with others and with the environment. She draws on feminist phenomenology, difficult words to say together, ethnography, and creative practice research. They're always great words. Alongside her writing, Karen choreographs sight dance, dance theatre performances, and creates video dance work exploring relationships to place, well-being, sustainability, land contestation, and socio-cultural understandings of belonging. Wow. I'm aware, I'm present. Karen's environmental activism is expressed through her performance, pedagogy, and praxis within university education, as well as professional and community contexts. So please sit back, relax, be in your body, keep breathing. Welcome, 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 Karen, and thank you so much for your generous offering. Thank you. Comments, if anything resonates in the chat. If you have anything for Q&A at the end, please put it in the Q&A. Thanks, everyone. Look forward to sharing it with you. Sorry, I did mean to say, if anybody would like to be in the panel where Karen can see you while she's doing the presentation, just towards the end, we'll invite you in there where she'll engage you in a chat. Apologies, Karen. Over to you.
Hei timatanga mākou, ko te mihi nui ki te Māori o tēnei whenua me ngā tai e nguguru nei ki Aotearoa nei. Ka mihi nui anō hoki au ki ngā iwi o te ao, ki tērā atu whenua, ki ngā tangata whenua. Ka huri aku mihi ki oku tūpuna kei tāwahi, kei e kōtirana me kanata hoki. I whānau mai au ko nei i raro i te mana o te tiriti o Waitangi. I tipu ake au e te puku o te ika awa Māui, e noho ana au i hamutana i nāi nei, i ngā taha tika o te awa o Waikato. Ko Baba me hunt oku hapu. Ko Karen Baba toku ingwa. Tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou katoa. Greetings, everybody, and thank you very much, Janine, for the lovely and lengthy welcome and acknowledgements. I very much appreciate your introduction. Thank you. As you said, I teach dance at the University of Waikato in Aotearoa in New Zealand. And I'd like to provide a little bit of context for those of you around the world who may not know too much about where we are in the world. I'll even give you a map in a few minutes, if that might help perhaps. Before I get into that though, I'd really like to acknowledge the Embodiment Conference. This is my first time participating, and I really appreciate the invitation from Adrian Harris to join in this particular channel. I want to thank my teachers, Alison East, who's a New Zealand dance researcher, ecologist, friend and mentor, and Sondra Fraley, whose work I've been reading for 30 years or so, and with whom I've certified as a somatic movement educator through her East West Institute. I'm going to refer to work I've done with colleagues Vicky Hunter and Melanie Klitzel, so I'd like to acknowledge them along with my family and my students, some of whom are listening in today. Thank you for your support. I think also it's really important to recognise in the wordiness of the way that I perhaps might seem, that there are many writers and researchers who've really deeply affected me. And so I just want to pay tribute to Andrea Olson, David Abram, Rosie Bray-Dottie, Maxine Sheets-Johnson, and of course, Sondra Fraley, all people who have deeply affected my understandings, my ways of being in the world. So this workshop today focuses on expanding our embodied knowledge from local to global. And this is something that I'm very much working with constantly myself. I'm not sure I can say I have brilliant answers to everything. And already in the sessions I've attended in this conference, I've been incredibly inspired and learned a great deal. But I'd like to share some things with you today. And that will involve a little bit of somatic work, very gentle somatic work, and a little bit of movement practice, perhaps some embodied ways of knowing depending on how far we can go in the time and with the limits of the technology that we have. I must say we've all learned quite a lot recently about how to do embodiment work online. And then I'd like to shift from somatic to activist processes. And this is the point where I'd like to invite your own thinking and contributions in discussion a bit later in the session. And then we'll close at the end. So as I said, as promised, where am I in the world? Well, Aotearoa, New Zealand is a small group of islands in the south of the Pacific. So just to orientate you, if you're unclear about what you're looking at, the little white patch down the bottom is Antarctica, and the small blue dot is approximately where I am in the world. So the view from the world here is miles and miles of ocean, and sometimes a bit of Australia on the horizon. So, being part of an island culture in the South Pacific and the global South is the context in which my work has arisen, and in the context of the peoples who are here. So I think it's fair to say that my work reflects the experiences of tangata whenua, people of the land, Indigenous people for whom a spiritual, practical, genealogical relationship with land and place is embedded within the worldview, within Te Ao Māori. For Pākehā, people of Aotearoa who understand themselves in relationship with Māori but may have ancestral connections elsewhere in the world, a deep connection to land and a deep sense of place, or what we might call topophilia, can also be seen for some people. And of course, there are many more people here who think of themselves as New Zealanders, perhaps Canadian New Zealanders or British New Zealanders or Chinese New Zealanders, who continue to have some identification with their homelands. and really recent immigrants for whom an identification with their homeland might be quite traumatic, might be quite complex and diverse, and their relationships with place, both home and our new lands of Aotearoa, is a process of coming to belong, coming to understand differently in a new place. So in what I'm going to talk about today, I'm situating myself here on this in this tiny island in the middle of the South Pacific and the Global South, in the middle of Te Moananui a Kiwa, the South Pacific Ocean. And also in terms of ecological thinking and environmentalism, most particularly ecological feminism and eco-phenomenology. And I do also acknowledge the developments of feminist new materialisms and post-humanism, but I won't spend too much time on that today because there are other things we may want to do, and those are complex discussions. I do invite you to write notes as you go, perhaps enter things into the chat box, and if you wish, come to some discussion together later in the session. So, I always feel, I suppose, obligated to do a little tracing when I start to talk about embodiment. And that's because in my coming to think about embodiment, I had to work backwards from where I am here and now through the history of Western Enlightenment, which really influenced my thinking and influenced the thinking of many Westernized nations. And that takes me, not only, but does take me back to Descartes. So if I think about Westernized societies, the influence of these European worldviews, philosophies, languages, and practices has been really significant. We look at René Descartes, I think, therefore I am. And this is really the basis from which our separation, our dualism, or our polarity between mind and body arises. The mind is a driver of the body is the vehicle, the temple of the mind. And this is a kind of mind-body dualism against which many of us have perhaps rebelled. We may have felt, and certainly I did as a dancer, very uncomfortable with the idea that what it was to be human was to have rational kind of thought and to have a mind, as opposed to being embodied in the world. And I'm pleased to be part of many, many thinkers, part of a lineage of people who think critically about this kind of worldview. And I suspect if you're here in this session, you're part of this lineage of critique too. So I want to talk just a little bit about the significance of some of the feminist critique. And again, I'm talking about critique of Westernized views. So Aotearoa is really influenced by these Westernized views, and it is or can be thought of as a colonizing society, which is built on these kind of dualisms. While of course there's significant, and I'll talk a little bit more, significant influence of Pacific, Māori, and Asian philosophies and thinking here. We could say that some of the most dominant ideas still remain Westernized ideas. And so we end up with these pairs of opposites, which I anticipate you're probably familiar with in your experience and in your reading too. One of the significant feminist critiques is to align these pairs of opposites and then to say that the alignment of the right-hand side here, the body, female, feminine nature, personal experience and emotional experiences are subordinate to the other side, to the mind, to the male, to the masculine, to the rational. So feminist critiques challenge this dominant understanding of the world, arguing that we don't accept dualisms, we don't accept this Western Enlightenment history. And this kind of dualistic thinking has led both to the oppression of women and the exploitation of nature. And so for me, this is really where this becomes very personalized for me, in that I do have a sense of relationship between the way I can observe oppression of women in the world and I can observe the oppression and exploitation of nature. We could spend a lot of time unpacking the ideas of exploitation, the notion of what it is to be a woman and what constitutes nature. But I'm going to leave that here because I think those are discussions for another time, juicy though they are, and move on, allowing you to interpret as you feel appropriate for you. The most important thing for me out of all of this critique, though, is that feminists offer alternative understandings of embodiment and alternative understandings of how we relate within the world and with the world. So one word that we can use, and of course many of us here do, is the term embodiment. And this can be a way to signal and to avoid that European assumption of mind-body dualism. So to share with you how I like to articulate the notion of embodiment, and there are many ways, you will have your favourites too. For me, I think I like to always think simultaneously and holistically about cultural, biological, spiritual, artistic, intellectual, emotional, with recognition of difference in terms of race, gender, sexuality, ability, history, experience, and environment. All said like that to indicate that I really don't want to separate those particular things out. So I don't think that we are biologically, uniquely, and distinctly different from other aspects of our embodiment. We can't just separate biological aspects out, aspects of race out. They're all interconnected. Our spirituality is interconnected and our place in the environment is interconnected. So I wish to champion a holistic perspective. And again, I suspect that we may have some shared views here. Celine, can I just check in that you're hearing me well? Great. So for me, I like to think about embodied knowledge as developed from experiencing our knowledge as constructed, as something that we can contribute to growing, to developing new understandings, as contextualized where we are in the world, and of course, as embodied. So we have to really value our own experiential ways of knowing. For me, that's dancing, it's yoga, it's somatic practice, it's walking, it's loving, it's cooking, it's our actions in the world are ways that we come to know in the world. And movement is absolutely fundamental to that. And I'll just pay tribute to the work of Maxine Sheets Johnson, who built on Merleau-Ponty's work in talking about the primacy of movement. So when we think about being in the more than human world, and the world that contains more than human, in which we are decentered, I think we can, referring to David Abraham here, we can recognize the way in which we are inherently immersed in and connected to, rather than separate from, the natural or the more than human world. And really this just echoes what was in our short advertisement at the beginning of the session, right? That we are always embodied in the world. We have a body, we exist in a place, in a time in the world. And so here, drawing on both Andrea Olson's work and the recent work that I've done with colleagues Vicky Hunter and Melanie Kaletzel, we are always embodied in some place, and our embodiment allows for and fosters our somatic sensing of the place around us. We map places, don't we, through our embodiment, through our personal kinesphere, the reach of our kinesphere, through the sensory experience in our skin, and engaging with the immediate environment to gain information that's life enhancing, that's critical to our survival. So we may not be running away from tigers or predatory animals on a daily basis, but we are dealing with traffic. And in some cases that might be just as dangerous. And we're dealing with a whole manner of unseen forces, viruses, for example. So our embodiment is what enables us to gain this kind of life-enhancing information that allows us, of course, then to be able to survive in this complex world. Of course, and I must say this really clearly, there are so many alternative ways of understanding our embodiment in the world that are not based on these Western dualisms, including many different Indigenous ways of knowing. I'm not going to claim to be any expert in Indigenous ways of knowing. I live in a bicultural world, in a bicultural family, so I have some experiences of some alternative ways of knowing. And so I've tended to focus thinking about my legacy, my traditions from my ancestors from originally Europe. And that's been the focus for me. And I suppose also being a philosopher, having been educated in that kind of Western Enlightenment tradition, that's where my critique really started. But I really must say how many different ways there are to look at the world. So instead of dualistic things, we can think about threes, we can think about trinities, we can think about five, we can think about seven, different elements, chakras, different ways of looking at the world and understanding our embodiment. So that's a caveat, I guess. So I have a question for you, and this is just to ponder here as you're listening. What are the different ways of understanding embodiment that might be present around you where you are? So for me in Aotearoa, as I mentioned, tangata whenua, people of the land, Indigenous people, I have some experience living in a bicultural family. How about you? What is your understanding, your connection, your opportunity to build relationships with Indigenous peoples and perhaps have the tiniest glimpse into a different worldview? What do you feel the connection is for you to your own sense of tradition and indigeneity, whether it's of the place you're in or of another place? What about the people around you who've more recently arrived? People are moving, or until March this year, we're moving with increasing mobility all around the world for reasons not just of choice, but necessity of survival. Perhaps think, what are the worldviews, what are the different understandings of embodiment of the people who now join you as neighbours and community members? So I'm just acknowledging that while I'm talking quite a lot about Western Enlightenment and critique of that, I really do appreciate there are many different worldviews. I just want to talk just only briefly about ecology. I'm well aware of the incredibly well-renowned speakers in this conference, and I'll just offer a few thoughts so that you perhaps can see where I'm coming from. So I guess here's a fairly generic kind of definition about understanding the relationships and the dynamic connections between organisms within a system. Thinking about processes and thinking about movements is obviously important for me. And again, aligning with my holistic thinking about embodiment, I think a holistic perspective that includes people but doesn't prioritize or centralize the needs of humans over other organisms, and that seems to be an incredibly difficult thing for us to comprehend often. Instead, highlighting the ways in which we are immersed and connected rather than separate from. And of course, as I acknowledged David Abram at the beginning of the session, I couldn't leave without quoting his much read work about a genuinely ecological approach which strives to enter ever more deeply into the sensorial present, to become ever more awake to other lives, other forms of sentience and sensibility that surround us. If I add in here too, ecological feminism, I think there's an activist component always to this. So of course, ecological feminism extends into the theoretical and kind of philosophical discourses that I introduced briefly before and referred to, but I think it always has a link to action and activism, insisting we push for progressive environmental change and gender equity. Okay, I think that's a fair bit of introduction there, and I'd really like to get us into doing a bit of movement together. So I'm going to put this here, and those people who think academics are so terrible with words, you can absolutely critique me on this. I'm quoting the amazing Rosie Braidotti. There's many words in here which challenge me, but I think what I like about this is this idea of redefining our sense of attachment and connection to a shared world and acknowledging multiple ecologies of belonging. And I like this last line too. The self is fully immersed in and immanent to a network of non-human, animal, vegetable, and viral, as we most recently are learning so strongly, relations. Okay, so on to some somatic practices. Well, that was quite a lot to do before breathing. Perhaps we should have breathed first, but let's breathe now. Where I'm going with this, everyone, is to give a small opportunity to experience something somatically in our embodiment here and now, and then to think about those processes and how we might apply and unpack and learn from them in terms of our action in the world as activists. So, having been in my slightly anxious speaking voice, I'll shift into somatic teacher mode if I can. I'd like to invite you to make yourself comfortable. You may feel free to stay in your chair, perhaps to lie on the floor if that's convenient for you in constructive rest, or find another lying or sitting position that you feel most comfortable in. We're going to bring our awareness to breath and work through a few different options of how we might approach breath. There are, of course, many practices, and I understand there will be yoga practitioners and meditation practitioners and dancers and many others working with breath in different ways. So today I'm going to just offer a very simple set of possibilities with a very light awareness. I'm going to move my laptop onto the floor next to me. And while I do, please make yourselves comfortable.
Do you need the slides on, or if not, you can stop sharing so we get a bigger view of you?
Ah, she's done. We've frozen, so we'll just pause. So Karen's gone into can you message her maybe, Celine?
Yeah.
Well, I just let everybody know that clearly it's a good opportunity for us to connect to our breath. And I love this part of Karen's presentation, being a breathwork practitioner of 30 years, somatic breathwork. So let's just be present in our own bodies as Celine looks to find out what. Oh, here we go. Great.
My apologies. I'm back.
You froze. So that was kind of like maybe your freeze response, just having a little outing there, Karen. And now we've got you all self back.
Okay. So back to breathing. Please make yourself comfortable. And as I said, I'm going to lie on the floor here. Okay. Maybe I'll just sit, it might be easier. Okay, so take a minute when you're comfortable here. So I can see you, Janine, here, Kalili. Lovely. And close your eyes. I'm not doing anything special as I'm sitting here. I'm just finding a comfortable position for me. And I'm going to bring my awareness very lightly to my breath. And I invite you to do the same. A very light awareness to your own breath. Observing the flow of your breath, the inhale and the exhale. As it is occurring simply without effort now. And when you're ready, let's bring a particular focus to your inhale. You may like to breathe in through your nose and take a few deep breaths now, focusing on your inhale. Allow your focus to easily shift now to your exhale and watch your exhale as it naturally occurs. A few deep breaths, watching the exhale. Now allow your awareness to encompass your inhale and exhale and observe the natural rhythm and timing, the length of your easy inhale and the length of your easy exhale. And we don't have to judge or hold expectations, but observe with a light touch, a light awareness. If this feels comfortable for you to try, you may like to try a small pause, a small hold of your breath at the top of your in-breath, and a small wait at the end of your out-breath. Without forcing, just allowing yourself a little waiting. We're going to do one more thing here with breath. So we've done very simple awareness of breath with a focus on inhale. Then a focus on exhale. Then we tried being aware of the flow of the length of the inhale and exhale in relation to each other. And we add it if you feel comfortable, a small pause and a small wait. So here is your moment for choice. You have the freedom to make a decision between options. And of course, for those of you who do a great deal of breath work, you may choose another option that you would like to do for the next minute or so. So please make your decision. And let's take 30 seconds to a minute acting on our decision. And when you are ready, you can let go of that small moment. And perhaps shift position again so you feel comfortable. So we've done, and I'll share the screen just briefly. Just to acknowledge that what we have done is brought awareness simply to breath with a very light touch. We've considered some options and some choices. And then we had an opportunity to make a decision for ourselves that we then put into action. So this is very simple. There's nothing like rocket science going on here. But we're looking at a process that we can be practicing through somatics and through our everyday actions. So it was my intention that we try this with a particular movement practice. And I'm conscious of our time, but I thought perhaps we could do a smaller version of this. So many of you may have movement practices, for example, yoga or Tai Chi, particular type of movement that you're exploring in training or through a somatic practice, for example, Feldenkrais. Maybe you are rehabilitating an injury. So whatever it is that you're working with, you may like to choose something really simple that you can do feasibly where you are now. It could even be a simple stretch that you feel warm enough and is helpful for you right now. So I'm going to do downward dog. And as I do this, I'm going to talk just a little bit about some prompts, some cues that that you might think about as you work with your choice of a movement practice. So we will do this in a shortened form. But of course, I'm imagining that you can expand this, and I do expand this much more myself. So from where I am, I'm going to spend a little time in downward dog myself, and I'm going to offer some prompts to you as we go, which I will try to speak quite clearly and loudly because I will be further away from the camera, right? Okay, so please shift yourself into a position where you can move in whatever simple movement practice you would like to do. This may not be the moment for headstands, unless that's part of your normal practice and you are ready for that. So, As I find myself in my movement practice, I'm going to first of all review the kinds of reminders that I am often offered by my teachers and that I offer myself, the kind of reminders that enhance my own movement practice. And I'd like to offer you an additional thing to try. So please spend 30 seconds or so with your movement practice and the reminders that you would offer yourself and be offered by your teachers.
Karen, I suggest that I can go into Downward Dog and have my video on so you can speak directly. Great. Is that okay? All right.
You're very welcome, everybody, to join in Downward Dog.
Okay. Can you see me now?
I can see you.
Okay. All right. Jonine, can you see me? Can you give me a thumbs up? Okay. And so Karen can cue. Wow.
So as you come into your downward dog or your choice of movement practice, maybe it's rolling your shoulders at your desk, something simple. Review those reminders that you often have from your teachers or from your own repertoire of thinking about working through your body. So if you're in downward dog, perhaps that's this lengthening of your tailbone on the diagonal. Perhaps it's looking for a little rotation in your shoulders and sending your armpits around and towards your feet. Perhaps it's lengthening in the back of your neck and down the backs of your legs, rising onto your toes and then allowing your heels to descend towards the ground. And now as you do whatever practice you are working with at the moment and breathe through and come out when you need to, give a thought to acknowledging the connection between the atmosphere, the sky, the celestial world above us, the stars, and the grounding that we receive through the earth in the forces of gravity. So come out if you need to have a rest and then resume and find a little thought towards the connection between above us and whatever spiritual, practical, physics related way you interpret this. So a connection between what's above us, our external world above us, and the channel our body makes down through and into the earth. Take a moment while you're here too to have a thought for the horizon. Wherever you are, even if you are in a basement, have your sense of extending laterally, horizontally towards the horizon. Perhaps in your downward dog that comes across the back of your pelvis. Perhaps it comes in the spread of your rib cage, in the width and the soles of your feet. What does it mean to connect to the horizon? What does it mean to connect above and below? And now, wherever you are, whether you're in an air-conditioned internal space or whether you are outside and able to perceive, have a thought for the weather. What is happening in the world outside around? Here it is approaching dark in the spring. It's been drizzling today and everything is an extremely fresh, green and damp smelling state. Even though I'm inside, I have a sense of the weather, a sense of the time of day, a sense of the directions, my connection to the north and the south, my sense of where the sun is setting here at the moment or rising where you are. And then when you're ready, just come down out of your downward dog or whatever work that you are in. Give yourself a minute to relax and reset here. Make yourself comfortable again. So again, what we did was to work with bringing awareness to a movement practice, and again, in a very truncated short form. We looked at some options and choices. What might our teachers have informed us? What might the messages and the experiences we've had have taught us, reminded us about? We were able to make a decision to try out some of those things and put that decision into action. Should we all have more time and a lovely space to move more in? We might do this also, working more with embodied ways of knowing into a fuller movement practice of your choice, whether that's walking through the neighborhood, if you're able to be outside at the moment, whether that's dance improvisation, whether that's a yoga practice in your studio, some way in which we work with embodied ways of knowing. And I'd like to talk a little bit about what that is. So I will talk a little more now, and I'd offer you the invitation to jot down any notes and thoughts you have about this process we've talked very briefly about, from awareness to identifying options and choices, to making decision and then to action. Last night I watched a very beautiful session, which I believe you can still watch for a few more hours in this conference. And the facilitator's name was Leo Pepas, P-E-P-P-A-S. He was outside in the forest, and there was a lovely resonance between what I was hoping I could do and what he was able to do in his session. So I encourage everyone to enjoy that one. My experiences in this kind of work, working outside and even working in the middle of, I'm in the university buildings here at the moment on dark. My experience has been that there's a way in which we may simultaneously connect on a cellular level with the ecological context, with the environment around us, on a local and our body level with a sense of global relationship. And for me, that's an experience of being in the more than human world. And I am going to talk a bit about embodied ways of knowing, but I want to just clarify here this process that I'm talking about, in the sense that we're seeking a kind of an alignment between awareness, intention, and action. And for me, that's can also be expressed as embodied ways of knowing. This sense that we can actively, through our embodiment, understand the world differently and experience a process of creatively living in the world. There are many times when it's a great source of comfort for me to feel that there's creativity for me in how I can live in the world. And that sense of comfort arises through being able to bring awareness to my own experience and my relationship with the environment around me. And realizing that I do have options, I can make decisions, and I can undertake actions. So this is from a somatic perspective. I'm now going to flip towards the end of the session and ask what it might be that we do when we undertake activist processes in the wider context beyond our somatic processes that we've been talking about here. So I had to think as a feminist, how do I understand some of the processes that feminists undertook and are undertaking still in order to raise awareness. So raising awareness, consciousness raising, was a huge part of the development of feminist movement through all the different waves or whatever way you like to conceptualize the development of feminist thinking. So this awareness came through witnessing people's stories, through sharing stories of your own, and beginning to understand the personal as political, walking the talk. When I think about my experiences with environmental activism, there's some alignments too. Awareness and witnessing, maybe witnessing the consequence of the farmer in my childhood logging the native forest, the consequence of the hillside sliding into the river, the consequence on the trout that we used to live in, the water quality change. Documenting those kinds of changes and understanding coming of being in the more than human world. We put our bodies on the line as activists. We walk the talk as feminists. We put our decisions into action somatically. So this is where I would really love if anybody would like to come in and talk briefly about any of your responses. I know we don't have much time. So perhaps we can put some chat comments in there. And I would really love if people would like to talk to me about their experiences. What might we do to begin to activate? And what kinds of issues might we focus on?
So feel free to put some notations or any questions or comments in the chat. There were some comments in there, Karen.
Yes,
we can go back to those.
Kenya has a comment here about embodied ways of knowing, which I really appreciate. Valuing without exploiting, appropriating, and possession. And I think even with breath work, valuing watching the breath without grabbing at an agenda to be better at it or to hold a particular practice. Some of the really challenging yoga breath work, which I confess I'm not terribly good at, is something that I have to work very hard at to kind of attain any sense of understanding from it. And I feel like that is detracting from the valuing of the experience because I'm grasping towards something.
Perhaps we can read out the comment from Kinga.
Do you want to share that, Karen? And then that will probably be, and then we'll go to our announcements and then come back to you.
Kinga says, we must value our embodied ways of knowing. I guess the hardest is to learn and consistently practice valuing it without exploitation, appropriation, and possession. It's hard not to will to achieve success. The moment where you have that knowledge, woohoo, I've got it. Perhaps the dualism and knowledge and lack of knowledge has to be challenged first too. That idea, that sense of concern we have about whether we're knowledgeable, whether we can even know things. How to make everyone aware that we actually already know and that embodied knowledge won't ever be the same for each person and each time. Mm. Because we're social beings, exactly because of this, we need to exchange knowledge. And something about the fairy companion next to her who needs to go out.
Right, yes. Okay, and I'm based in Germany, so Cecile's just sharing Sasha's from Germany's comment, where she talks about being based in Germany, but she's originally from Brazil, and although she's not directly connected to various indigenous peoples there, there are different forms of animalism and what ethnographer Eduardo Castro defined as multi-perspectivism.
Yeah. There's some nice connections here to post-humanism and to understandings, as I've said, about being in the more than human world.
Yes, yes, but not it. And it's certainly an awakening, as you say, to all of that at these times. We really understand our interconnectedness to all things, Karen. So I think you really beautifully spoke to that, and we're having a lived experience of that on a level that we never had before. And a collective response is required. But I just need to take a moment for an infomercial, and then I'll come back to you for the last word and what you'd like to give as a final takeaway after all this lovely experience. But to those of you that have been enjoying the Embodiment Conference, you probably know that it's an extraordinary project that's been put together with a lot of blood, sweat, and love from so many people, led by Mark and his team. And it's cost an enormous amount, but that's being covered by sponsorship. And for those that can manage it, the purchase of the library. So you get to have all of this information, lifetime supply. So you'll be able to get a link that you'll be able to go in and access all of these amazing talks. I know I only grasped a tiny little bit of Karen's, but her links are in the chat and you can find her information following that. But you can also find her talk for the next 48 hours. For free on the links of the embodiment website. There's also a chat room that you can enter after all of the seminars, and if you want to connect with people, and the Facebook group. So this has gone live to Facebook. So if you want to share this information, because I think it's a time when its value is being reevaluated. And I think that's really a positive thing for us all. So thank you again for your very generous sharing and for your coming back from that briefly frozen moment we were wondering. And I wonder what you would leave us with, Karen.
I think my takeaway point from this, or my offer, perhaps more accurately, is that through our embodiment, we have the capacity to learn and to practice what we need for the future. So I think if we are to address ecological crises on a local and a global level, we need to draw on these kinds of processes that we experience in our embodiment. We need to practice, and we need to teach our students how to be able to bring their awareness to what's around them, how to identify the options so you can have a choice. No choice if you don't have options. So identifying options, being able to make a decision, and the criteria for decision making is sometimes arbitrary and sometimes absolutely crucial. And from that, we then act. It's the acting, it's the moving from that awareness to the acting that is most crucial for us now.
Awareness to acting, yes, because without that, the movement and change doesn't happen. Thank you so much, Karen, for that gift to us and your precious time. I see someone else in there as a researcher, so she may make a connection with you. Thanks, Celine, and thanks everybody for participating and being part of this by us sharing this information and taking it out into the world. That collective, different collective response will have a processional effect. So again, thank you. Go well, everyone, and see you on the next exciting episode of the Embodiment Conference. Take care, sister from across the seas. I hope to come across you again another time. Cheers, greetings, blessings, goodbye. Thank you so much. Thanks, Celine.